Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, sponsored by AstraZeneca, we had the pleasure of speaking with William J. Gradishar, MD, about the FDA approval of capivasertib plus fulvestrant for patients with advanced hormone receptor-positive, HER2-negative breast cancer harboring PIK3CA, AKT1, or P10 alterations. Dr. Gradishar is Chief of Hematology and Oncology in the Department of Medicine, as well as the Betsy Bramson Professor of Breast Oncology and a Professor of Medicine, Hematology and Oncology at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago, Illinois. On November 16, 2023, the FDA approved capivasertib in combination with fulvestrant for patients with locally advanced or metastatic HR-positive HER2-negative breast cancer with at least one PIK3CA, AKT1, or P10 alteration, whose disease has progressed on one or more endocrine-based regimens in the metastatic setting, or who have experienced recurrence on or within 12 months of completing adjuvant therapy. This regulatory decision was supported by findings from the Phase 3 CAPItello-291 trial, in which treatment with the combination led to a median progression-free survival of 7.3 months versus 3.1 months with placebo plus fulvestrant. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Gradishar discussed the significance of this approval, key efficacy and safety data from CAPItello-291, and how this combination may fit into the treatment paradigm for patients whose disease has progressed on a prior CDK4/6 inhibitor. Speaking today about the FDA approval of capivasertib plus fulvestrant in HR-positive, HER2-negative breast cancer, just to start off, can you discuss the significance for this approval?
Well, I think any new drug that's available for treating breast cancer is welcome. And certainly within the realm of hormone-sensitive breast cancer, we're always excited when we can have additional targeted therapies. And the reason I say that is because we've sort of moved along from giving monotherapy as endocrine therapy alone with agents like tamoxifen or aromatase inhibitors, fulvestrant, to partnering them with other agents to make them more effective or to delay or overcome resistance. So drugs like CDK4/6 inhibitors, mTOR inhibitors, et cetera, really moved the field forward in that space. And now with the PI3 kinase inhibitor alpelisib, and now the most recent one, capivasertib, we have just many more drugs that we have available to offer patients.
Can you dive into some of the key efficacy findings from the CAPItello-291 trial?
Again, the CAPItello trial looked at patients who were ER positive with or without an AKT pathway abnormality. There had been prior trials that suggested capivasertib would be particularly effective in tumors that had an altered pathway. So the trial included a significant fraction of patients that had such abnormalities, either in the AKT, P10, PI3 kinase pathway, 40% of patients as a rough number, and then a broader pool of patients who did not have pathway abnormalities. And patients were randomized between placebo plus fulvestrant versus fulvestrant plus capivasertib. And what it demonstrated was that there was a marked improvement in progression-free survival favoring the addition of capivasertib to fulvestrant. And although the efficacy from that standpoint, from the PFS standpoint, was clearly most pronounced in the bigger population overall, where the drug got approved are in those patients that have the pathway abnormality. So there was some evidence, even if you didn't have the pathway abnormality, the drug might enhance fulvestrant to a similar degree, but the FDA elected to restrict the approval to those patients that have a tumor with those pathway abnormalities. At this point, the survival data is still immature. There's not an indication that there's a marked improvement in survival. The curves numerically look a little better for capivasertib, but it's not statistically significant at this point. But the primary endpoint, which was PFS, has been met, and it's clinically relevant. The PFS went up from 3 point something months to 7.2 months. So basically a doubling of the PFS. So I think that's significant. You know, I think it offers patients, again, another option, and it's a targeted therapy for a select group of patients.
What is the safety profile of capivasertib?
So we're all familiar with what fulvestrant alone will do. I mean, for most patients, outside the context of a clinical trial where you capture every single thing that a patient complains about, you know, in the real world, the biggest side effect that fulvestrant has is getting the shot. That's it. Most patients don't have much in the way of side effects. And if you look at the force plots or the toxicity bar graph profile of the two treatment arms here, in the patients who are getting fulvestrant plus placebo, which is fulvestrant, you know, there wasn't really much of anything. It was single-digit toxicity, and there was nothing that really stood out. If you look at the group that got capivasertib added to fulvestrant, you are picking up a bit more in the way of GI symptoms. We do see that. So there's more diarrhea, more nausea. But if you look carefully, the grade of the side effects that are seen with the addition of capivasertib are usually grade 1 or 2. So these are generally well-managed things that are certainly familiar to oncologists. And, you know, we do see hyperglycemia with the addition of capivasertib, and we may get to the issue of how this might compare to alpelisib, and obviously indirect comparisons, but the frequency of hyperglycemia seems to be less than what we see with alpelisib. So that could make it as an attractive alternative to those patients who, say, have a PI3 kinase mutation. Might you use capivasertib rather than alpelisib in the same population? So I think today, if you have ER-positive metastatic breast cancer, your first-line therapy for the vast majority of patients still remains endocrine therapy plus a CDK4/6 inhibitor. And that, of course, may change with time as more patients get a CDK4/6 inhibitor in the adjuvant setting. But today, CDK4/6 inhibitor remains the first choice. Then typically we're checking for molecular abnormalities. We tend to do blood samples to look for mutations or a tissue sample. And the things we're looking for have expanded till, you know, a few months ago. You know, ESR mutations would have been of academic interest, but now we have a drug. We have elacestrant that can be used in patients with ESR mutations. Based on the SOLAR-1 trial, we had alpelisib for the 40% of patients who had a PI3 kinase mutation. And now we have a drug that may be useful in patients who have AKT, PI3 kinase, and P10 mutations or pathway abnormalities. After progression on a CDK4/6 inhibitor, we'll do those molecular analyses to try and figure out what the next best step is with respect to a broadening number of options we have for patients. I do say, and I made this comment earlier, that I think the community, meaning our community oncology, is going to have to get familiar with using capivasertib. And if the trial results bear out, particularly with respect to toxicity, it may turn out that in patients with PI3 kinase mutations, that capivasertib may be a more attractive drug from a toxicity standpoint than what we were seeing with alpelisib. And the other thing, in the SOLAR-1 trial that led to the approval of alpelisib, there were relatively few patients that had received CDK4/6 inhibitors, whereas in the Capitella trial, you know, a significant chunk of the patients had received CDK4/6 inhibitor treatment in the past. So I think that there might be a duel, so to speak, between alpelisib and capivasertib in terms of how physicians make that choice between those two drugs in this particular population. And I think there's probably going to be some movement away from alpelisib towards using capivasertib. And then, you know, again, elacestrant is there for those who have ESR mutations. And then finally, you know, there are patients who have both an ESR mutation as well as a PI3 kinase mutation. Which one's going to come first, elacestrant or fulvestrant plus capivasertib or alpelisib? And, you know, we don't have good data, but I think you know, will look at the patient, decide what toxicities they can handle, and, you know, make decisions based on that. So the sequence may be, who knows, for some patients, elacestrant first, then capivasertib or alpelisib with fulvestrant, or vice versa. People may use two drugs first and then go to elacestrant. That remains to be seen.
And so then just looking towards the future, is there any ongoing research in breast cancer maybe related to this or just in general that you would like to highlight?
There'll be, you know, additional information about SERDs. You know, we obviously have elacestrant, we'll have others. And one of the strategies now is using capivasertib or alpelisib or any of the targeted agents is partnering them with the SERDs, including elacestrant, to see if they offer efficacy advantages. So my guess is that these drugs won't be restricted, referring to alpelisib and capivasertib, simply to fulvestrant. They may be combined with other drugs. Ultimately, they may be used earlier in some patients, particularly if CD46 inhibitors become more commonly used in the adjuvant setting. If that happens, then some of these drugs will move up probably to first-line options for many patients. So I think that this area is evolving, and we anticipate the approval of other SERDs and possibly other targeted agents as well. There are other PI3 kinase inhibitors still in development, so we may hear more about those with time. Compared to when I started and others have started, when the only options were really bad drugs, and then tamoxifen came along, and that was the new best drug. The field has evolved remarkably in the last 25 years with the introduction of many new agents. And we're talking today about endocrine therapy. And I think that's really reflective of the entire scope of breast cancer, all the different types, where we had very limited options in the past or options that weren't desirable because of either the way we had administered them or the side effect profile. We now have drugs, and many of them, that make patient options more extensive, and we can be more selective in choosing what is best for a patient. We don't just have three drugs. We have many drugs. And I think that's a good thing for all patients. And the hope is that that will continue as we go forward.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air, sponsored by AstraZeneca. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms, so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.